This presentation was recorded at the Western Fellowship Teachers Institute. For more information about the Institute, call 541-999-7467 or email jolasmucker@gmail.com. That's jolasmucker@gmail.com.
Well, good morning and welcome back to those of you who were here yesterday, and welcome to those who were not. I had prepared this little pack of papers where we had 19 or so questions, and I tended to address those questions, but yesterday things went a little more freestyle, which is fine. I think the class was beneficial for me. Hope it was beneficial for you. But as I warned some of you yesterday, I would like to hear, let's just have a little recap. What are you going to carry away from our discussion yesterday? So if we could have a little recap, what are some lingering thoughts that hopefully you're going to carry into the next room? I do not have any more, I'm sorry. Okay, I apologize. If it goes like yesterday, you won't need it much anyway. If it's worth assigning, it's worth correcting. Thank you, Jesse. Some more. Right, the reason for grading is to determine student mastery. Appreciate that.
Do what feels good as long as your scores are represented. I mean, there's no set way of doing things.
Right, there's a range in this matter of grading as far as practices and so on. School culture. I remember that Aaron bought stickers because that was part of his school culture for 100%. Is there more? Yes.
I really like the idea of using the block of points for like a history lesson to check your memory.
All right, we discussed how can we grade things that aren't necessarily what the subject at hand is, such as history, but we do want to encourage good grammar and so forth, and Uwe had suggested giving a block of points for each question or assignment, and then working off of that. Is there any more?
Should always read all of the reports and everything, even if you don't give a specific grade.
That's right. Respect the students' work, especially reports, it was mentioned. Be sure you read over them, give feedback as you can. All right, I think we'll move on. Thank you for your feedback. Today, where I'd like to go, maybe some of this is a little bit self-serving, but we had some debacles last school year, last term, related to numbers 5 and 6. So I would like to look at numbers 5 and 6, and then I would like to go to number 11, because that came up on one of the questionnaires that I got back. So we like to deal with number 5, number 6, and number 11. And then I would like to have a discussion regarding another question that was fielded verbally. And I think maybe what we're going to do is I'd like, Brother Anthony, if you would verbalize the question that you had brought up, and we're just going to table that for now, in case you don't have enough to think about, you can be thinking about that. So go ahead, Brother Anthony, if you would just take what time you want to describe this, because this is also his question. It was something that I was thinking about as well, so it did have a rhythm in my own thoughts. So go ahead.
Yeah.
take the best person and hold you up against that person. Would you down? How can we slow that concept in the school? How can we evaluate that if a child is sustaining that, we can honor that piece? That doesn't mean that students are going to fail, remember, struggle, feel stupid, and all that. But to me, Jim, it's a problem that I don't have any other problem at all. Other than, are there at times when we can give credit for effort, respect, carefulness? So, obviously, we could not create a system in which if you could evaluate that if you know your sustainable best, that is an A. So if you do 10% less than that, that's a B. For the next student, that very same quality of work would be an F.
So,
it's a concept that I could work with all the right teachers in the world. I don't know what to do with this.
Yes. No, I've been
so,
I had a student in algebra this last year who failed the course. But as far as the amount of effort that she put into it, and as far as her intentions, had we been grading not from perfection down, had we been grading from intention and effort down, she would have aced the course. She put more effort into algebra than any student in my class. And I felt a little like, of course I don't watch television, but I was at a place where a business place where they had a television of professional boxing going on, and this man would knock down his opponent flat, hard, and then he'd help his opponent back up to his feet, and then he'd bang him down again. And this went over and over until they finally took him out of the ring. That's what I felt like I was doing to that student. I was, with each new lesson, you know, you kind of help him up, and then grading time, whoosh, knock him down. And also, Brother Anthony brought up the thing about how does God relate to us? Our grades ought to somehow reflect that larger truth. Now, can we leave that and go to number five? Let's do. Okay, let's keep it brief, though. Number five and number six. How should we deal with do-over work? When should it be required? How do you record the grade? Under 80?
I'm top of that. My children was not last year when I moved down up to 80, it was 70. But I went up to 80 just so they would look a little harder. And I was tough because one of the best, you know, you get 70 minutes of time, still redo it. And it got them, they didn't like it, but at the end of the report card, they liked it.
One of my boys in math class, the teacher had, for him only, had the policy that under 93, he redoes the ones that are wrong. And
is that what we're talking about, the do-over is just corrections, or is that a whole lesson?
Yeah.
Or what's do-over?
Okay, good question. What are we calling do-over? I would have understood it'd be fixing the wrong ones primarily. Well, you just validated the approach there.
Yes.
Keep going, Anthony.
I think that is one of the stress points of policy with no flexing.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to pause a little bit and warn you that we're not drawing a lot of hard and fast conclusions in this class. But you could have written down a few things there, and as with other comments, a hard and fast policy is not necessarily the answer, right? And it takes discernment, and it takes a teacher. The teacher that my son had, for instance, last year, I would call a teacher, because he perceived my son's ability to get a 93 and above. And he served that my son very, very excellently. There's more things that could have been written down. But, all right, there's other hands. It was Joel, and then Avina, and then Jesse, and then John. All right, let's go. One. Oh, okay. There's one of the keys of good teaching is to help the students learn from their mistake. If a if you allow a student to do what they will do naturally, they will look at the grade on the top of the paper and crumple the thing up and into the trash it goes, right? But we've missed one of the richest opportunities for learning because that paper delineates what they didn't do right. And if a student can understand what they didn't do right, as Jonah just said, that's learning from our mistakes is really one of the most basic of life functions that we need to lead our students into. Jesse. Okay, just one moment. Is everybody hearing? Go ahead, speak loud enough because this is everybody doesn't have the microphone. Thank you. Exactly.
Sloppy and don't care.
Right.
It's almost always the slow student who already has piles and piles of work, already has piles and piles of homework. And so he's, as I said, he's getting overwhelmed. The teacher's like, well, if I make him redo this, we're just going backward another half step. Well, by the time the end of the year comes, we're gonna be clear, out of sight.
Right.
And so to be flexible and to sometimes communicate that to the student and to let, I don't know where the other students come in here, but somehow there has to be a kind of a group understanding here that the teacher is not being unfair when he's letting this slow student get by, as it were. But he's using his wisdom to help this student continue to move on, even though student A is not doing as much as student A. And somehow as a teacher, you have to communicate that and help the other students understand that you're doing this for the good of the students, and you as a teacher are evaluating the abilities and the effort and all of that. And you will reward the effort of the intelligent student as well, just as you reward the effort of the less, if I may say, less. Mm-hmm.
Shifting the focus slightly, what do you do then with the do-over grade? It was already mentioned that if you have the failing grade or the unacceptable grade, then the new grade, then what are you going to do with those two grades? I don't mean to make a simple thing complex, but this is. So I think I agree with what Aaron is saying in that it depends. It depends on why they got it wrong. It may be our fault. And one of the classic signs of it being our fault is when it's more than just one, you know, when it's a larger group of students. But if it was a result of carelessness, yes. Pardon? Oh, yes.
That can be a valid concern. I think if you weigh in the test, especially in math and English, weigh in the test having a valid.
Mm-hmm.
That takes some pressure.
But if you only lay a test at 25%, then you can end up passing students who should have been passing. So a lot of things come up factually.
Exactly. Okay. And that's where we had our rub last year at our school. What do you do when they fail a test? Again, it depends. But what we had in our situation, it was students that were failing the tests that we were telling them they're going to fail a test. We knew they were going to fail a test. We knew they weren't putting their effort into it. We were saying, let's go, let's go. They weren't responding to that. They didn't give a care. And then they failed the test. And then the parents were asking, could they retake the test? I don't know what you all think. And I wish you would have been there to handle it. Anthony. Pardon? I don't specifically remember. Yeah.
Our policy is that they do that with absolutely no cost. Because they'll pay for those kind of mistakes other times and places. How will those tests reflect what does the child do?
Right.
And if they skip five problems, do them.
Yeah.
How about that 80% to mean they know 80% of their stuff? Not because it made someone dumb or more mistake. So, again, for us, we weigh heavily. And so, they'll get factors in. Just a suggestion that those kind of mistakes.
Test redos and homework redos are a complete different ball game. We're not even talking about the same thing anymore. Yeah? Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, a lot of times we have an idea of a range of what a student should get. Mm-hmm. You know, I had one student that was getting generally 90s and 100s on all the tests. And all of a sudden she got a 67 or something. And I said, that's not normal. You know, so what's happening? She'd just been through that morning or something.
Number six, should we curve grades? Just like to touch on that one very briefly, and I think maybe I'm just going to give my opinion this time. very, very occasionally. And I would say a situation where you would curve a grade would be not on homework, assuming that, as Brother Anthony mentioned, that your test grades are weighted as heavily as or more heavily than the homework for the report card average. That's the assumption I'm working off of. Curving homework grades, I don't think it's worth it. Test grade, where I would curve a test is if I didn't write the test and the test ended up requiring knowledge about something which I did not emphasize. That would be an example. Or if the fault lay with me as a teacher, primarily, for whatever reason. So how do you curve a grade? Are you going to give everybody, everybody gets to add 10% to the score? Well, that doesn't work very well, for obvious reasons. The 90% people get 100, the 93 will get something ideologically unsustainable. Go ahead. Curving is basically an admission. Pardon?
Maybe do it, but don't even realize it.
No, I don't think this is something you're doing without knowing. The curving degree would be, okay, you got in this batch of test grades, and the highest, best student got an 80, and the lowest student was in the 50s, let's say. And we go, wow, what happened? And then you begin to realize, okay, they were asked to write essay questions for things that were valid information, say, in science. I don't believe in curving math grades. Math is too factual, okay? But here there was an essay question about something which you didn't do because you went down this other field of knowledge which is equally valid. Now what? Or perhaps you were just crammed too hard for a Christmas program or something and you neglected science to the extent that they weren't able to make the grade. Now what do you do? You know, short of going back and reteaching that unit, which maybe you should do, but short of doing that, what are your options? That's where curving is an option. And what I think the proper way to curving a grade simply means we're gonna artificially lift those grades up. That's what we're saying. And that's why we probably should be very careful and hesitant to do so, but I think that there are occasions where we can do that. I think maybe last year I curved not more than twice. Some years probably not at all. The way you do it, work with the number of points between the grade and 100. So the 70% grade has 30 points. The 60% grade has 40 points. And then determine what percentage of that gap you're going to increase everybody's grade by. So if you say, I'm going to do a 50% curve, according to my language here, if I'm going to do a 50% curve, that means that the person that got 70% will get 15 points added, which is way too large of a curve. The person had a 60%, there's 40 points, they'll get 20 points added. That's the way you curve grades. Anthony. Okay. Make it 35. Got it. You can do that, except I'm too mathematical. I like to know exactly what I'm doing. See, there it's kind of like guesswork. I'm just sliding this thing in and out. But I know all I'm doing, too, is just sliding things in and out. All right, number 11, by popular demand, I guess. This was something that came up on the questionnaire. What are some school-wide policies that should be held regarding grades and how? The question, as it was written, should a school-wide policy a grading point system be put in place. What do you have to share about that?
Well, it seems like to have a school-wide policy, if you're going to exercise flexibility, a school-wide policy tends to run counter to that, unless the policy is flexible.
Here would be an example of that standard criteria for passing. First grade is 90%, second grade 86, third 79, fourth 76, fifth to 10th 70. And there's, I'll lay this back on the table. There's a whole bunch of rationale that goes along with this. Brother Anthony. That's right. Right.
Ask deadlines, what percent tests weigh in, and then we have a little flexibility.
Okay. Got two things there. Now, and considering our teacher attrition rate, we need to have some standardized things. And also the new teachers coming in need to have some directionalness. I know I did. I think you hit on two very important things. One is pass-fail, and also test weighting. That ought to be for report card averaging. That ought to be, I feel rather strongly that needs to be school-wide, maybe a different standard for first and second grade. All right, I don't know exactly where we are in time here, but I think we are going to go to Anthony's question. So we're back to this thing again of we have created and we spent a lot of time testing and grading, and we've created a system that is based on something. And it's based on, I think we would say it's based on realities of life. Yeah? I think we try to say it's based on realities. You know, worthwhile human endeavor is worthy of a grade. It will be scrutinized and so on. And also there is that fact that, you know, one of these days, time will be no more for us individually or collectively. And then we'll stand before God and we'll be judged. And our grading, I think, is an excellent time to reflect that larger truth. But does God only grade by results? And does he not also grade by intention? And can we not somehow work this into our grading processes also? But now I probably didn't reflect it quite the color you wanted there, Anthony. Satisfied? Okay. Or what do I do with my algebra student? Just a wonderful, wonderful girl in many ways. But she did not have academic skill. She just didn't have academic skill. But at the same time, I would have been pleased. And if one of my little girls would grow up with some of the same qualities that exuded from her, of which I did not grade. I think that's very necessary, very good point. Try to have them taste success somewhere. That's good. Now, as it relates to Bing, go ahead. I have a little form we have forms for misbehavior at our school, and I got uncomfortable with the amount of papers we send home that were negative. So I made a positive one, just a little form that says that thus and so student earned this. It's called a GEM form. because, and I can fill in the blank, and they can get the parent's signature if they want. If they bring it back with the parent's signature, it's a duplicate. I throw it in the file, and it's there when I'm doing report card grades. Students like that. If they know that, that I have this on my desk when I'm filling out the report card conduct grade. But I could give her affirmation. I gave her affirmation in algebra through those little GEM forms. Not very often, but sometimes throughout the year for her effort. And I did not give those to the ones who pulled consistently 95 and above. There was another thing. I think that's a great question. It's one that I thought long and hard about. She needed to know algebra because she wanted to do it. She could not have accepted herself for dropping out of algebra. I'm sorry, I have a lot of interference. You heard it. That's absolutely right. Now, there is nothing to keep you from designing your own report card. Well, that's just one thing that needs to be, you need to bring along. That was part of my intention with that little award card, that little GEM card thingy. You can give those to fellow staff. It just says on the bottom, thank you for making Garden Springs Christian School a great place to be a teacher, principal, or student. On the bottom, it has those qualities which Brother Anthony was talking about, integrity, excellence, caring, sharing. And, you know, sometimes you circle one of those, kind of like a border on the bottom. But more thoughts. Yes, when you're in collective...
What do you do with that problem?
Yeah. It's probably not going to be something that's real aggressive, but I have had, why are you giving her a break? Type of questions. Can I have a break too? And I think we ought to be prepared for that. But it is amazing how much other students do understand without you talking about it. Brother Anthony. Is that right?
Thank you.
Yes. I've also asked sometimes if that didn't work, you can say, well, you know that thus and so struggles with that in ways that you don't. And so we're trying to meet students where they are. And you don't want those struggles, do you? Whatever. Neil. You had a thought?
Just a lot of this coming down to your classroom culture and what you talked about yesterday, acceptance of each other. If your students have learned to accept one another, knowing that they know who's slow and who's fast, and love it, they make a lot of this without anyone saying anything. And to help them with the workload, I've had students who would come to science class and not do the lesson. They simply didn't have the time, they could finish their math, English, and reading. During the week in school, it was, if anything, got rewarded during the week because it was accelerated. And the other students had no problem with that. And those students were able to enjoy a science class, get to watch the experiment, and take part in those kind of things without the burden of the lesson.
You mean the homework?
Yeah.
Right. I think what the problem that Brother Anthony has highlighted is based on the fact that at school, in a collective way like this, we need to build a system that best serves the most. And that is seen in other areas as well. I mean, there's many different forms of intelligence. And a lot of them I'm lacking. But I resonate well with school because school operates in the forms of intelligence that I've been endowed with. But I'm very unartistic, and I don't have good eye-hand coordination when it comes to writing on the blackboard or operating heavy equipment, that kind of thing. But there's other students, other people who excel in that. I guess where I'm trying to go with this is, I think that our academic situation, we simply try to do the best with what we're given, and that's all we can do. And so where to come to rest with some of these things is, finally, all we can do is try to. And so often, God blesses in spite of us, not so much because of us. And so we try to do the best we can, and as the song says, leave the rest to the Lord. But I really think, as I think maybe it was Jonah that said, as our students can understand our heart in relation to them as a person and their abilities or lack of abilities, well, I think that that creates an atmosphere where they can thrive and becomes a grand leveler to some of this stuff. See, one of the things that that student, the algebra student I've been referencing along the way, she had a heart for little children. In fact, I think she could be a school teacher for younger grades. And she loved to go help out in the younger grades. And I allowed her to do that. Oftentimes during our recess, she wasn't very athletic. And so during our recess period, she'd go down there and she'd have students reading to her. She'd be doing flashcards and stuff. And sometimes I wonder if that's not the thing that kept her coming to school. But at the end of the year, the card that she gave me, it got kind of long, and it helped me realize that I had achieved more objectives than what I thought I did and what I felt that I did throughout the year. And it related to some of that communicating that I care about her, I accept her as a person. Right, there's about 12 minutes remaining. This is your class. You have some other questions here, a few that we didn't get across. If you want those, fine. If you want to talk about something else or some other question, let's talk. Yes? Is there more thought on that? How can we, is there more some more practical ways in how we can make that student feel? This hardly fits anymore under the subject of testing and grading. the question is valuable nonetheless. And I, considering the discussion we've had, that kind of poked around at that a little bit, maybe that ought to be written and put in the question box. I really think it could be, and perhaps should be, but is there more thought on that? Yes. The parents are your greatest ally, and not only this kind of situation, but many others. If you can work up a program for that student that the parents will back, 80% of your work is done, or more. That's very, very important. I had one girl who was she just missed it in math. She came into our school setting in about the seventh grade, and her ability just was more like fourth grade. And she was working terribly hard in math, but she didn't learn that fast. She'd make up 3 years in 1 year while she was learning what everybody else was learning. So she wasn't ready for eighth grade math, all that, to say that. She wasn't ready for eighth grade math. And I felt that if she would redo the seventh grade math book, it would be okay. But she was one of those that's very sensitive, very aware of what other people are doing, how other people may be perceiving a move like that. But we talked about it with her parents. The idea was sold, and it worked superbly. it worked excellent. And I can affirm that through third party testing her ADSS score, which I talked about yesterday, on her achievement test went up about 3 years by redoing the seventh grade math book. But we had buy-in from the parents.
Jesse. The other thing is, watch your attitude. Mm-hmm. They can pick up on facial features.
Yep.
Just in little comments, yep, that you make. It's amazing what they pick up on them. And if you just make just an instant mark of, oh, considering your workload, you did a good job, boom, that just only knows that you're constantly thinking about it and it's not really what, where you want it to be. And that totally, that knocks them down a bit. It does not look like that.
We teachers need to have the mentality that we're not there for those who can pull 90% and above without a teacher. We are there for the losers, if you know what I mean. That's who we're there for. And if we can't relate well to the ones who do need what we would consider special help, you're not a teacher. You might be an assigner. You might be a manager of children. But you're not a teacher if you can't reach down to those and help them. You know, grades are an opportunity to really teach some very valuable life lessons. As you were speaking, I had to think about how during the summers for a while, I worked for an excavator, and I found out that I don't have what it takes to be productive and profitable on a machine. I ball up. I mean, it makes me too nervous. I'm too results-oriented, I guess, that I stymie my own learning process. And you know, just I'd go home with very bad headaches if I was, you know, running a hydraulic excavator, for instance. There's way too many moving parts, and I see people who can make those things go just like I'm scratching my head now. Okay, and I couldn't. I wanted there, but I wasn't patient enough with myself to get myself there. I'm not so endowed. When I called my employer and reckoned with the fact that I'm not making the grade, I said, look, I'm sorry, this job is frustrating me. It likely is frustrating you too, my performance. I'll be happy to drive the dump truck and move equipment and so forth. It was wonderful when I wasn't put in those situations anymore. I reckoned with my inability, and how did I know I was unable? Well, I wasn't making the grade in terms of this topic. I reckoned with that, got to where I could. I can keep a truck on the road at 55 miles an hour as well as anybody else. Then my life was happier, everybody was happier. But I was still contributing to the cause, of course.
The fact is, we all excel at something. I mean, for me, it might be just eating candy. We all have a good point. And I think if we as a teacher could just dig and find that good point and then make it a point to prove that of your student and teach them how to do that, that can be so. And another thing, if you're often, well, depends on how the student is. Often, extra school activities with them will be really cool. You know, you can take them to town if you just buy school supplies. But that's terrible fun. I mean, you both enjoy it, you build a relationship. And, you know, if they love you, then they're not scared.
teach, so to speak, but I think as a teacher we should be very slow to step back and say, well, I can't teach that. It's a little bit of a reflection on our inability if we step back and say, well, I can't do it. Maybe we just need to find another way to do it.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes we just need to keep slogging on. I know just before I came to this conference, I had 20, 80-pound bags of sackcrete that I thought I had help to plant posts with. And it ended up that I was doing it all by myself. And I did not want to do that at all, because I'm bad at lifting lots of concrete. I'm just not good at that. And all things balance. All right, the conduct grade, what number was that? Number 15, what methods could we employ in 15 and 16? What would it take for one of your students to get an A in conduct? Is that the way you grade conduct, folks? You start out at 100 and work down. Yeah. For lack of time, just a few things that I've learned along the way that help me. Maybe they'll be a help to you. I hope so. But the one is track it. If I am coming with completely no paperwork, no nothing, and this is just something I'm out of the hat, conduct grade, I can't trust myself in those situations. I track it. I have a system of that for me works. For you, probably is too cumbersome. But I have a system called the green card system, where every student has a card hanging on the desk. If there's infractions, we write them down. That way, at the end of the marking period, tunk, 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 here are my green cards. There's a parental signature at the bottom, and so on. And then I have a policy. It's a paper that says, Mr. Jonathan's no fear conduct grade system. No secrets. Here it is. If you have, you're allowed to slip up a few times on the green card. We allow for some margin. And you start with an A, but here's what'll get you into the A minus. Here's what'll move you down from an A to an A minus, and here's something, if you have a demerit or a pink slip in our school, well, that knocks you down not by a single step on the ladder. You go from an A from a B, from B to a C, and so on. That helps me, and I feel like I need it. But I'm probably in the situation where I'm teaching, I think I'm probably working with more disciplinary issues than what maybe some of you all are. I had to adapt to make it work. I feel like I'm 50% teacher, 50% disciplinarian. Whereas when I taught in the Mennonite schools, I felt like I was 90% teacher, 10% disciplinarian. Count your blessings. What else do you have to say on that? Really what this becomes, that's almost a question more just to get your brain. Okay, when is good enough good enough? That's a question that I think that it would be good for you to establish that before 11 o'clock the night p.m., before report cards are due. Well, God bless you with this school year. I hope that this was an encouragement to you. Sometimes I think these teacher conferences do the most for me in a general overarching sense and just getting me into the mood, the spirit of teaching, and I trust that this class has accomplished that end. And the Lord richly bless you. You're excused.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.